People don't realize is entrepreneurs are literally professional failures. I decided to leave that very, very safe thing to start my own business. At the time, I was a single mom of a toddler, right? I had just left an abusive marriage. There was nothing that was going to seem scarier than anything I had just gone through.
Welcome back to 9 to 5 Mom with the Pod. I am your host, Fran, and today's guest, she's amazing, Cori Logaitis. She helps women in the workforce become leaders and entrepreneurs by identifying and addressing overwhelm culprit. Cori has just been featured in major media outlets such as TEDx, Forbes, Girl Boss, and Business Insider.
I figured out how I was able to manage what I was managing, and I call them the overwhelm culprits.
A lot of you are going to be surprised today, everybody that's listening. So we always talk about marketing. We talk about strategies and how to become a mom influencer or just, you know, have your side hustle into a full-time business. But today we're going to talk about failure. Well, specifically, become a professional failure. I think that's how you call it, right, Cori?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to go over all that, the strategies to overcome fear of failure. That's something that I don't think we've talked about. So I wanted to bring you in. What better guest than you on this topic?
Yeah. Well, you know, between everything that I've been through, you know, in life, and I talk about this a lot, you find it in my bio. I had led as a corporate SVP for many, many years. And in that time frame, had experienced a variety of different trauma over the course of 5 years. Mm. And in addition to that, having to fail in those areas of my life, and then also later on decide that, you know what, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I'm actually a fourth generation entrepreneur. So I stepped away from running and heading my family's business to start my own. And along the way, if you're an entrepreneur, like what most people don't realize is entrepreneurs are literally professional failures. They fail and they fail and they fail so many times that they eventually make money out of it.
I think that's literally our career, is failure throughout until we figure it out and, you know, find a strategy and system that works for us.
Like failing, if it's something like for me, it was, you know, I ultimately decided to leave a very secure career running my family's business, six figures, had been in it for a long time, had the title, had everything. Mm-hmm. I decided to leave that very, very safe thing to start my own business. I actually cashed in my 6 months of emergency savings. I called it an emergency of my soul to be able to do it. And at the time, I was a single mom of a toddler, right? I had just left an abusive marriage. And on top of that, I had also lost my post-divorce partner, not my abusive ex, my partner after that to suicide. So there was nothing that was going to seem scarier than anything I had just gone through, right? In starting my business, that seemed like the most inconsequential, like fear, after everything I'd already gone through. And when you look at, you know, a lot of very, very successful, you know, entrepreneurs or celebrities or people who are really known in their field, in their careers, mm-hmm. a lot of them have had very, very challenging, you know, personal lives behind the scenes. And it's really like no secret as to why they've been able to develop this muscle of not giving up mm-hmm. when things get tough. And that's something that's very, very important when it comes to failure, because no matter what, you get knocked down, you have to get back up.
I mean, your backstory is just inspirational because it just proves you're like living proof of that. Hey, you can do it. You can sacrifice a few things. You can make it work. And things don't have to be necessarily perfect. And it's okay. And I think we don't embrace failure, honestly, as mom creators, as women. We don't embrace it because we're just programmed to be that way. We're programmed to feel guilty when we're not doing enough or when we don't mm-hmm. accomplish something. We're like, oh my gosh, I feel lazy, or I feel like I didn't accomplish anything. I have to remind myself every single day that I have many, you know, micro wins. But those mm-hmm. micro, I have to remind myself every single day, even to date, I have to remind myself this was a micro win. Like I did something. But sometimes mm-hmm. when it doesn't feel like you're bringing money in the bank at that particular moment, you don't see that a year from now. You don't see that fruition a year from now or 2 years from now, mm-hmm. et cetera. So, and there's so many other stories. I mean, look mm-hmm. at the author of the Harry Potter book, single mother, receiving mm-hmm. welfare benefits, To make matters worse, once the book was completed in 1995, no one wanted to publish it. And after a dozen of rejections, Rowling finally found a willing publisher in Bloomsbury, but the company urged her to change her pen name out of fear that young male readers wouldn't want to read a book written by a woman. I mean, this is an example, and I feel like we don't talk about it enough. I want to know a little bit more about your backstory. How did this come about for you? I know that you mentioned like leaving corporate job. Was this something that just inspired you, that you just, you know, woke up and you're like, I need to make a change, or?
No. So, I mean, looking back at my very kind of like brief high level overview of my corporate career, I started off with a really expensive piece of paper that said I could draw well. So I went to art school. I graduated with no job prospects. I was waiting tables. And that at the time had really ticked off my dad, who had helped bankroll said expensive piece of paper. And at that time, he was like, you know what? Until you figure out what it is you want to do, why don't you not wait tables? Instead, come work for the family business. You could start as a graphic designer, you know, do artsy stuff and figure out where you want to go from there. So I was like, all right, cool. And I joined and blinked, and 15 years later, I was running the entire operation as SVP. Never in a million years anticipated to really enjoy business. But again, I think a big part of that too is I am a fourth generation. You know what I mean? So I think that we're kind of like predisposed to really liking the game of business and strategy. And I was very well suited for it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen the level of success that I did within that career. And what changed for me, that like kind of pivotal moment, like you had said, was I had in a 5-year time span, while still needing to show up and lead and be responsible for other people, you know, in my career, had gone through everything from miscarriage. I left an abusive marriage. I literally had to take my son with me to work one day when we left. I was homeless and penniless for a while. I had to rebuild my life following that divorce. It was a very high conflict. And then after I had settled, you know, and everything was on the up and up and things were looking great. And I was still performing at a very high level at this point, to the point that my therapist had said, Corey, you're doing things that my patients are not able to do 6 months following a divorce. If you could teach people how to do what it is I see you doing, because you're managing it and still remaining a high performer, but you're not running away from your trauma. Like, if you could figure out how to package that, you could have a huge impact on people. I kind of like dismissed it. I was like, yeah, whatever. And the real turning point for me was a couple of years after that, I lost my post-divorce partner to suicide, and I was the one to find him. And it really kind of made me look and see like how I was intentionally choosing to spend my life. That I never got to see my son. You know, as an example, I, you know, during that time frame, I was commuting over 20 hours a week. I got to see my son maybe an hour in the evening. And the most I got to see him was through my home security camera systems while he'd play with my au pair, you know, when I would check in during my lunch break. So it wasn't the life I wanted to be leading. And that moment really kind of made me realize like, hey, you know what, Corey, you've built your life up back from zero before. It wasn't what you had wanted it to be either. So this time you have an opportunity to do it differently. And from there was when I decided, you know what, I'm going to go into business for myself. I started off as a business coach. I eventually got into speaking because people were just asking me, you know, about my story, had a lot of encouragement, great mentors and stuff along the way. And through this process, you know, really it was from the encouragement of that therapist I had many years ago, I figured out how I was able to manage what I was managing. And I call them the overwhelm culprits. There are 5 causes that cause you overwhelm and cause inaction. Right. And, yeah, that's how I got into the work that I'm doing right now. I speak on it professionally. I do workshops. I do coaching. I have a book coming out in 2026 with HCI Books that's all about the overwhelm culprits. And it's funny you mentioned too, you had talked about not only fear of failure, because we're talking about that like in depth, but you had talked about like women's fears in particular. And these are all topics that are directly tied into how we feel overwhelmed and how we prevent ourselves from, you know, experiencing things like failure and really like trying. And a lot of it isn't necessarily that we don't want to. A lot of it is societal conditioning. A lot of it is mindset. But when you're able to actually see things clearly in front of you, it makes it much, much easier to move forward and take action.
Taking a leap is also a really big deal. By the way, your entire story, inspirational. I can't thank anybody more to write a book about this, because I would be the first one to read it, because it's again, it's proof. And but yes, we don't take leaps, like but that's mainly because we're, you know, fearful, and you know, we also have responsibilities. We're tied to different things, you know. Life just gets lifey, like I say, and it throws things at us.
I mean, you know, it comes down even to things as simple as how we're treated as children, right? So when you look at this, is science. There's like data and research that supports this.
Whoa.
When you look at the way parents treat little boys versus little girls, little boys are often encouraged to like mm-hmm. you know, go out there, like take the shot, do the jump, you know, where little girls are like, you should be careful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a completely different set of circumstances, and none of it is intentional either. You know what I mean? It's not that parents set out to do this, but these are stories that little girls grow up internalizing, you know, where, you know, even something as simple as, you know, the traditional Disney story, it's like, oh, the princess needs to be saved and we're waiting for Prince Charming. Mm-hmm. We're constantly conditioned that the story is, no, we can't save ourselves. We need somebody else to come and do it for us. Granted, this is starting to change. I'm very, very happy to see that, you know, with the stories that my daughter gets to watch compared to what I did back in the 80s and 90s. But that said, it's no surprise why, you know, women do have more, you know, troubles with taking a chance or dealing with failure or even perfectionism in general. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in a society right now, especially with social media, where everybody's aspiring for, like, you know, the Pinterest aesthetic, you know, or everything being Instagram perfect. And we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people, but this is specifically driven towards, you know, women's audiences. You don't see men's audiences in media driving that level of perfection in the same way. So mm-hmm. it's a really kind of nuanced topic, but the one thing I can share with anybody listening to this today is it's not you.
Right.
It's the society. It's the systems. It's the world that we live in. And when you have the ability to see things for what they actually are, it makes it much, much easier to shift your mindset and decide to choose differently.
I think that also part of the reason why we have this, especially professionally, because we're speaking about becoming, you know, a professional failure, right? Social media is huge on this topic, because I can't even think of a person that even I myself catch myself sometimes scrolling through social media, and I see this aesthetic of being the perfect housewife, or, you know, making, you know, meals from scratch, for example, right? Even though for some is show, but for others is just like, you start comparing yourself like, man, am I good enough because I'm not doing X, Y, and Z. And that also ties into, like, if you ever thought about having a business, right? That's your business is going to be a roller coaster in itself. That's right. You're going to be doubting yourself, and then it's going to be great, and then it's just going to be a doubtful thing. So I just quit my 9-to-5.
Congratulations.
So, I know. You so it's the leap. What is it? It's been 30 days that I have not worked a 9-to-5, because I put in my notice in the beginning of April, but I was always telling myself every month, I love my job. I still do. I still talk to all of, because I work in law. Well, worked in law. I don't work in law anymore. but it's still difficult for me to actually acknowledge it. I still wake up every day thinking I'm going to go to work. You know, it hasn't left my mind. That's how programmed I was. And when you're programmed with a 9-to-5, you know, I said in the beginning of April, when I took the leap, I said, this is it. I'm going to do it, because it's, I don't know how much more I need to make my business, you know, more sustainable than it is right now. Like, for example, like in the beginning of when I started my journey, I said, I'm going to wait a couple of years, you know, save as much as possible, bring in as much money. But if I don't bring X amount of money to my business, then I don't want to quit my job. And then in April, the discussion came up where it was like, how much more are we waiting? Because we met the goal, but it's just because it's not perfect. And the way that my brain works is that, like, even if I'm $100 short, I haven't met my quota. You know, like.
Right. There's a reason that our brains do this.
Tell me.
because scientifically, and again, this is like biochemistry.
Yeah.
We're wired that we need that safety and security. right? It comes down to that kind of like maternal instinct in a way too, that we're like providing for our kids and we need that, you know, the roof over our head and everything else. So for us to take a risk on something like starting a business, right, where your income is directly impacted and it can directly impact your security, that's why it's so much harder.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Where when you look at like male entrepreneurs in general, not all of them, I've worked with a lot who have those fears as well with the security, but it's much less common. They're more likely to go and be like, okay, I'm going to try it and see what happens. But for a lot of women that I've worked with, it's almost incapacitating.
Yeah.
You know, because you are so afraid you're not going to have that income. And that income is because it's your security.
That's 100%. You know, now that you bring it up, I have heard of, now I have to go back and do this because I have heard of other men when they talk about starting their journeys and things like that. They're like, oh, yeah, I had to, you know, put my house, you know, like get a second mortgage or something like that. But it's like nonchalant, like very like, hey, this is what we're doing. For me, it took me 6-7 months to just prepare. You know, to be like, oh, yeah, but what about this, the insurance and my daughter's insurance? We're going to have to switch it. And then after this, you know, where does the fund is going to go? It's going to go here. But then and then in my head, I'm like, and it's still not enough. It doesn't matter how much money I saved. You know, I say, you know what? Let's not two cars, one car, you know, not two insurances, one insurances. But we think about those things, you know,
right.
it's like you said, it's almost like a defense, you know, like we're just.
Yeah, it's designed.
We're designed that way.
It's designed to keep you safe.
Yeah, we're literally designed. And then forget about it. I've always been in a 9-to-5, you know, so I've never in my life have never been anywhere outside a 9-to-5. That's all I know is a 9-to-5 job. So, you know, it being the 30th day, you know, even if I take an hour sometimes to just rest, it becomes like I'm lazy. I took away too much of, I'm hard on myself. I took too long of a lunch. Like it's literally 1 o'clock. I should have been back by one, you know, like 12:55. I should have been back working at my desk. It's the strangest thing.
Failure comes into that too, because you're defining yourself by what's considered successful in a typical 9-to-5. Granted, the workplace is changing a little bit now, like post pandemic, and you have, you know, remote work is more common and things like that. You have a lot of organizations that are moving to a performance-based metrics as opposed to face time in the office. But then it's not a secret at this point. So many organizations now post pandemic are rolling back work from home initiatives, and there's a mass return to office. So you kind of see the workplace like splitting into like two at this point. But if you've been in a 9-to-5 role where your performance is basically consistently on a regular basis for many, many years, judged on how many hours you are spending to produce that output, instead of looking at what is the overall output, like what did you start with, what did you end with, and not taking time into account, then yeah, you're gonna think that you're constantly falling behind if you're not putting the hours in.
Right.
You could very well as an entrepreneur, and I know so many entrepreneurs that do this, where actually I'm a great example of it. I was working anywhere between 60 to 80 hours a week for my six-figure salary. I work 20 hours a week now. I'm not quite at the six-figure salary, but still, it's like, I work at a fraction of what I was working before, and I'm more than covering my bills and working for myself. But it was learning to kind of reframe that work ethic, that my time isn't necessarily tied to money, right? It's not by the hour. As an entrepreneur, you have to look at the overall like output based on the effort and what actions you are taking to generate that revenue. It's very, very different. You can be very, very efficient functioning on, like, I know one person in particular, she works 4 hours a week and she's got a seven-figure business.
Bless her soul. Right? Call me.
Bless her soul. it is possible. It is entirely possible depending on your systems, your structure, your SOPs, you know, how you design your business. The more refined you are, the more, you know, output you can have with less input. But as a new entrepreneur, learning how to rewire your thinking from that typical 9-to-5, put the time in, to shifting it to being results oriented instead, it takes time. You know, and it's not something to beat yourself up on either, because you're not failing at anything, right? You're learning. If anything, it's you're trying new things at this point And that might be to rest a little bit more to see if by taking one step back, you take two steps forward to see whether it changes your results.
Yesterday, I was just like, I am so burnt out. So I was trying to get back on the wheelhouse of working and doing my regular thing and all this stuff. And my goal for the week has been met because I did it in those 2 days. But still, because I took my daughter to go see Miss Jolie, she's like this like local Miss Rachel here. I went to go take her to see Miss Jolie. I spent the day with her and then I came back and then I just did some house duties. Guilt all day long. Mm-hmm. Like this morning I woke up mad that I'm like yesterday I basically just like threw my day away and I should have been working and it would have been like another goal. But then I'm like, how much more should I go? You know, like how far should I go with this?
Right. Well, and that's a huge part too. And talking about the whole like professional failure thing that we're talking about, figuring out ways that you can tie that you're actually tracking your progress and that you're able to see those micro improvements.
Yeah.
Because truth is your ultimate success is going to be the sum of a lot of really boring actions done consistently, especially in business to generate revenue, to have the results that you're looking for. It compounds over time.
Yeah.
But you need to have a way to actually record what you're outputting. So if you're working 15 hours, just as an example, you work 15 hours 2 days in a row, but you didn't actually track what you worked on, right? You just kind of like worked on stuff and worked through it. And you have no visibility to what you spent time on during those 15 hours that actually generates the best result for you in week, you know, 4 and 5, you know, after, because it's going to take some time before it actually gets momentum, those actions. You're not going to have the information that you need to know what to make micro pivots on when you feel like you're failing. Because what's ultimately going to happen is you're going to be taking these 15-hour days, like you had said, and you'll be doing it and doing it and doing it and not seeing any results. And then you're either going to change something prematurely, which is ultimately going to derail your entire momentum, or you're going to just give up and be like, you know what, this ain't for me. Where really what you need to do, if you're like plateauing, you need to look at, okay, what is everything I did over the last couple of weeks? What worked great? What didn't work great? Where might the gap be between where I want to be and where I'm at right now? And then making a micro pivot. But collecting that information is so, so important so that you have that. So you're making a confident decision moving forward and not something based on like emotions or feelings. I feel like I'm behind. It's very easy to say when you don't look at a time log, for example, and see like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm not behind because look at all this stuff I did before I went to go see Miss Rachel.
So busy work. Busy work is one thing, and then actually doing something that will impact your business is another. And you should not mix those two for failure, which is, you know.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because the busy work in particular, I had a mentor once. I love the way that he put this. Certain types of busy work, especially when you are a brand new entrepreneur, like I'm talking about like brand new, just starting out, would be things like before you've ever had a paying client, tweaking your website, changing the hex colors on your logos, you know, social media content. Like, no, like you need to be working on like having conversations with people to sell your service.
That's true.
First, before all that other stuff. And he calls it creative avoidance, which I love.
Hold
because
on.
It's true.
I got to write this down. Creative avoidance.
Creative avoidance. Credit goes to Greg Faxton, who I worked with for a year at one point. But that's what he calls it. And it just really, really resonated for me because truth is a lot of times if you could identify, okay, well, what are the things I'm kind of like wasting time on, which that could be one of it. What is the fear that you have surrounding actually talking to people to sell your thing? Because you're never going to get past that point and actually start to generate revenue until you're able to get past that fear.
That's the same thing for social media. It's funny because a lot of mom creators are like, well, I don't want to start because, you know, I just I have a fear of putting my face out there. And that happened to me in the beginning as well. And to some people, it's easy. Just start recording and just start doing. But there's, thank you, Greg. We're giving you the credit. Creative avoidance. Creative avoidance is a real thing. And, you know, and then you just start doing busy work.
Another great one. I give credit where credit's due. There's a great money mindset coach that I work with named Denise Dufield Thomas.
Oh.
Same thing. She calls it procrastibranding.
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 I love it. I need to meet all these people. Where are these people in my life?
It's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. I even had to go through this myself because this was the core reason why I waited so long to write a book.
Mm.
Right? I had visibility fears, which is really ironic when you think about it. And I'm going to unpack my own for you guys so you can see how to kind of apply it for yourself. So for many, many years, and granted, I've been in digital media since like 2004.
Right.
So I was with social media like right when it was rising, and I did it professionally. I was an SVP of marketing, sales, and ops. So very, very involved with digital media creation and stuff like that. So I've had my own personal brands for fun for, I don't know, 15, 20 years at this point, whether it be different blogs or I had Instagram accounts and Facebook, Instagram. At this point, I have a following on every platform. I don't spend time on all of them though. Mm-hmm. But that said, I've never had an issue, like you said, just turning on the camera and going, right? So over the years, what I kept getting asked every time I do a speech somewhere, hey, do you have this in a book, right? Or on a social media post, like, hey, do you have a book about this? I put it off. And the reason why is I had these fears about everything that I went through to create what I do today, i.e. what my therapist saw in me to be able to like process and do this myself, would mean being very public, not with the public, but my family would be able to see it. Cause of course they're going to go and they're going to buy my book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I didn't know if I was ready for that. Also a big one for me too, was my kids, right? Mm-hmm. My kids know, and they could see like certain stuff on social media, but there's a lot of stuff that would have to be in the book to kind of explain the context, right? And how to actually go through it. But was I ready for one of my kids to be able to pick the book and find out what happened? You know, and I had to kind of unpack these fears, because truth is, doesn't make any sense, because I'm getting paid by companies to share this story on stage, and it's the same story. So right. I have no issue there with it being public, and it can very easily transfer to those other areas. But I had to unpack for myself what those other fears with like it being public to my family and whatnot, what that meant for me, and be able to get over it, which there are so many different things that you could do in terms of being able to reframe fears. Things like, you know, using affirmations is a great one. I love emotional freedom technique. Which is called tapping. It's
tapping?
A method where you're, yeah, I don't know if anybody here on the, any of the listeners have heard of this. It's where you tap on different points, meridian points on your body while saying affirmations in a way, but it's designed in a specific way that
I think I saw it in a show. The sister something, something, or the with Jessica Biel, where she it actually was a trailer, and I was like, what is she doing? And then she goes, she's like, oh, my sister's here, or something like that. And then she was trying to affirmate herself or whatever it was. And then I was like, what is she doing? What's that?
Emotional freedom technique is excellent for rewiring fear in particular, because when we feel fear, you could actually kind of feel it in your body. Yeah. You tense up and whatnot. And by doing emotional freedom technique, because of the tapping on the meridian points, it helps reset your nervous system that you don't feel that escalated feeling.
Okay.
When, during those periods that you're actually speaking on and doing the EFT tapping script for.
I've always been a very kinesthetic type person where I like to touch things, feel things, but I'm also like doing them as well. So right. The act of actually like touching like points, you know, just to reignite that would be very, I think that would be very helpful for me actually.
Yeah. Well, it's really helpful too, because again, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, that when we're in an escalated place, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of our nervous system, it's because we don't feel safe and we don't feel secure, right? That's ultimately the root of where fear comes from, anxiety, all these different kind of like negative emotions. So by knowing, number one, it's not a logical fear. It might be a fear that's based in something that happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That you're kind of reliving again through this new experience that should not be scary.
Right.
You can reset yourself to kind of detach from that negative memory by doing a practice like EFT.
Thank you for that. And your book is coming out. I know that we sort of mentioned it, but I'm excited about this. I really wanted to talk about it a little bit. It's coming out next year. It's actually about this.
It is about my Overwhelmed Culprits framework. And in that, we actually go through a lot of the topics that we're talking about, whether it be, you know, fear of failure. So how to become that professional failure, But before you could even do that, though, you have to learn how to take action to the point that you are afraid of failing, right? We have to get unpack all the stuff happening before that. And that's where the overwhelm culprits can really help.
Right.
The culprits themselves give you like really like quick like intro to them. They're super easy to remember. They all begin with a C, and their lack of any one of these five things. It's lack of clarity, lack of confidence, lack of community, lack of conditioning, okay, which is your physical and mental health and wellness, and lack of consistency.
Let me tell you, consistency is one of the things that I will tell you is I know that people just toss it like it's like no big deal. And I feel like creators and all creators out there, instead of tossing consistency like, oh, it's just you have to be consistent. I get it. No, we have to be very, very specific.
Here's a really, really great way for your audience in particular who are creators, right? How to use the overwhelm culprits and how they can apply in different areas.
Yes.
So if your culprit was lack of clarity, for example, lack of clarity would show up in not knowing who your audience is, not being clear on what you want to talk about, not being clear on what your goals are for even having a, you know, brand page to begin with, right? Those would all be, if you're like stuck on those things, your culprit's lack of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
If it is lack of confidence, this would be like turning on the camera and showing my face.
Right.
It would be like, I don't know what to say, you know, like I'm not confident that, you know, people will care, you know, what it is I'm saying. So that's very simply like lack of confidence. Lack of community would be more, you know, my partner doesn't support me, you know, in doing this, or I don't know somebody who could teach me how to do this.
Okay.
Right. Or I'm not sure how to find out where it's finding that tribe of people who are going to help and support you to get you to the next step. Because truth is, we can't do it ourselves.
That's true.
Right. There's nothing in life. And that's for a lot of moms, that takes a lot of rewiring, because right, we're kind of commended in this society for being able to do it all ourselves.
Right.
You know, you can have it all, you can do it all, you go, mom,
we
got
can
this.
All do it
we're,
all that's what I say all. I know,
and
like
we're expected to do it by ourselves.
What do you want to be today? You could do it.
Yeah. So that would be a lack of community, lack of conditioning, and I'm sorry, I want to go back. Yeah, conditioning. When you were mentioning before the burnout, right? You're like, oh, I spent like too many hours on it. I could just feel I was burnt out. I couldn't think. I'm tired. I'm, you know, not eating right. I'm not sleeping well. So I'm too tired to record. Things like that
mm-hmm.
would be lack, which for a lot of moms in particular, anytime I do a keynote, and I have a free quiz too that folks could take, it's CoryLowe.com/overwhelm culprit.
Perfect.
To figure out which one is yours. Anytime I do an event, especially with working moms, conditioning is always the top culprit, because
Wow. We're
always putting everybody else's needs before our own. So we're not taking care of ourselves, and that plays into how we're able to perform.
Yep.
And then, like you had said too, lack of consistency. So if you're, you know, frustrated that the actions you're taking aren't having the results that you want, more than likely it's because you're not taking consistent actions on the things that are actually moving the needle.
A lot of the times it might be one tiny little thing that you have to change. It's one of those terms. It could be either clarity. It could be confidence. It could even be just consistency. But if you just tweak that.
Yeah. And
that's
the beauty of the system, because the system's designed that you identify. Because really, when you think about it, when we feel overwhelmed and we're like stuck, that we're not like progressing towards what it is we want, it usually means that something changed and what we were doing before is no longer working.
Yep.
Right? And it's really that simple. So what a lot of women in particular do is when they get overwhelmed, they feel guilty, they feel shame, right? We're supposed to be able to do it all. But truth is, it has nothing to do with you. It means some external circumstance changed and now you need to adapt for it.
Yep.
So the overwhelm culprit framework is really helpful for that, because it helps you identify why you're overwhelmed in that moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you could make strategy changes based on that. So as an example, if like your lack of confidence, right, maybe you get, you know, some video training, or maybe you start making yourself record videos, you know, on a regular basis until you feel confident, right? You start taking action towards it. You start building that momentum. You're no longer overwhelmed anymore with it. But what's going to happen? Something's going to change.
Yeah.
That's the way life is. But then you could just go back and say, okay, which one of the five is it this time? And it just repeats. And the thing that's really, really cool about it is, and I've been speaking on this topic for about 5 years now, I've done keynotes where I've been in an event and there were people in the audience that saw me at another event for the exact same talk. And they come up to me after and they're like, this was so great because I didn't realize it at the time, but my culprit's different now. So I had completely different takeaways from watching your talk for a second time because I was hyper-focused on that culprit.
I have a different culprit for every day of the week.
It could happen. And they cycle.
I feel like it is a cycle.
Until you address it, though. You have to be able to address it and do something about it, because otherwise it will just cycle.
And just to circle back and wrap up here, I wanted to just say it's true. You have culprits, and I feel like it could be on a daily, it could be even like in seasonals even, where you feel good about your brand one day, but then the next month you don't feel good. Now you have lack of clarity again. And a lot of the times that can happen because your brand might shift. And it's not that it's not a bad thing. It's just that sometimes maybe you pivoted, something happened, maybe that other business idea or that portion of your business plan was not working. So you had to pivot. And that sort of alters your brand a little bit. Normal. That's part of every business. If you have lack of confidence, let's say turning on that camera, or you have like that creator's block, right, that like moms like to talk about a lot. What I like to particularly do is that I go on YouTube or I go on a platform and then I learn something. I'm like, okay, well, I'm stuck on, you know, this particular effect. How do I make this transition from this portion of the shot to the next? So then I look at a video, I take notes, and now I have that clarity and confidence is gone, because now I'm actually testing it. It was like, wait a second, it's the same thing. So it's just it's really about really troubleshooting yourself every single month, I would say. Or I mean, for me, I guess it would be daily, but for somebody is different. But the idea is that not falling behind and not letting that failure control you. But other than that, I want to say thank you so much for being here. Can you tell us where people can find you? I know you mentioned a quiz, and I'm going to put it on the show notes below, but I'll let you describe it.
You got it. So you can find me online. My website is CoriLo.com. The quiz you could find directly there on the website. I'm also, as I mentioned before, on every single social media platform, LinkedIn. I'm mostly active on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, all of them. And you can find me at I Am Cori Lo. It's the same handle for all of them.
Oh, perfect. So there you go, everyone. I'm going to put all the descriptions and her channels in the show notes, so that way you can find Cori directly. And we'll also let everybody know when her book comes out. We'll do a little post about that. Maybe we'll even have you on the show right before launch week. That would be amazing. That way we can talk about it, because I'm going to be definitely reading that.
We could go much deeper into the culprits then.
Yes.
For that one, as opposed to just fear. So that would be a great combo.
That's going
to
be amazing. Again, everyone, thank you for listening and hanging on, and stay tuned until next episode. Thank you, Cori.
Thanks for having me.